All right, in Matthew chapter 6, so this is the heart of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. We're right here in the very middle of his sermon. He's addressing problems in today's chapter that begin to creep up in our walk with God as we serve him. So one of the many blessings that we get to have as Christians is we get to serve God with our very lives. We have opportunities to serve him in the workplace, to serve him at home, to serve him here at church, right? We have opportunities here to volunteer to help clean and set up and tear down and serve food. And, you know, trust me, there's many ways to get involved, and we welcome your involvement. We always need help around here. There's Bible studies available from, you know, elementary, middle, high school, and to adults. And there's individual, there's corporate studies. You know, there are many ways for us to grow deeper in our faith and even in our service to God. Now, but as much of a blessing as these opportunities are, and I hate to even say this next, but it also comes with a great danger. And for some reason, and I think it's just because we're humans and we have that human nature, right? We tend to find our fulfillment in doing these things. If we're not careful, we find our identity in being a great person and doing the right things. We find enjoyment from being seen. We value being recognized. So in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus begins to address these things. This is what he says in verse 1. He says, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound the trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly." All right, so first of all, take note of something this morning. Jesus is not saying that we should not do charitable deeds. But what he is saying is that when we do something good, we're not to do it with the intent of being seen by others. See, what matters here is the motive behind what we're doing and why we're doing it. Do we do things to be seen by others? Are we serving and volunteering our time all the while, blowing that trumpet and saying, "Hey, look at me, look what I can do"? See, Jesus said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. In other words, it's almost as if we're keeping this a secret from ourselves. Because what happens when we sound that trumpet before others? Well, he says, guess what? Then you just received your reward. That's your reward right there. And it's a good one. Don't get me wrong. It's a nice pat on the back. It's a good job. You did it. You swept those crumbs into that nice little pile there. Awesome. You got your little reward. You put it inside your treasure box. Safely, securely, but guess what? In a matter of minutes, hours, whatever it might be, you take a look inside your box and guess what you find? Nothing. That's because it's no longer there. So what happened to it? Did someone steal it? Did you misplace it? No, here's what happened. It just didn't last. You know what you did? You did something to be seen by others, and you got exactly what you asked for, a smile and a thank you. But what eternal value did it provide you? I think the answer would be none. See, Jesus says, you got your reward. Congratulations. Now, if you'd have done it humbly, as unto me, not unto men, I had something set aside for you right here. But you chose something else. You wanted the compliment. The compliment mattered more. Hey, it's just like that kid who sits at the table and their mom gives them a cookie, right? And she says, look, here's one cookie now. If you hold on to it, I'm going to disappear for a minute or two. And when I come back, if you still have that cookie, guess what? I'm going to give you two cookies. See, for me, it would have taken a whole dozen, but whatever. It never fails, though. The mom, she returns, and look what's happened. The kid has crushed the cookie, and he's confused as to why he doesn't have his reward. And I think some of us are going to have that same look on our face before Jesus. We're going to be wiping those cookie stains off our lips while holding out our empty hand, waiting for that reward, for our treasure. And he says, no, you had your reward. Remember when you did that? He continues this thought now with prayer in verse 5. He says, and when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you've shut your door, pray to your Father who is in a secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. And when you pray, do not use vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think they will be heard for their many words. Therefore, do not be like them, for your Father knows the things you have need of before you ask him. So first, Jesus addresses our physical works before other people. Now he addresses spiritual deeds beginning with prayer. He says, look, there are those who just love to pray. And you know who they are because they stand in the middle of the sanctuary shouting their prayers. And, you know, they're on the street corners and they're shouting not so they can be heard by God and not so they can be pointing other people to Jesus, but they do it so they can be seen by other people. For the purpose of being seen by others and to look more spiritual. What does he say again? He says, hey, they have their reward. Only here's what that looks like. Wow, that guy's pretty spiritual. Oh, that girl knows how to pray. Wow, that person really loves Jesus. Look at him go. But he says, when you pray, don't be like those hypocrites. He calls them hypocrites. They're hypocrites because what they're displaying on the outside is not indicative of what's truly happening with them on the inside. Don't be like that guy, he says. No, you go into your room and you shut the door behind you. You go into that secret place and you seek the presence of your Father who has a different type of reward for you. See, if God knows the things that we have need of before we even ask them, why are we shouting them out for everybody to hear? Now, we can and we should be praying for each other and with each other here in church and so forth. That's nothing wrong with that. But not in a way that draws attention to ourselves, right? Again, consider the motive behind what we do before the Lord. Now skip down to verse 16. He says, moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Same concept, right? He says, when you fast, when you forsake something so valuable to you, such as food, do it for the purpose of seeking God in the secret place. No one needs to know what you're doing and why you're doing it. You don't need to walk around all downcast, you know, telling people all about your hunger pains because I'm seeking the Lord. Oh, you hurt my stomach? Yeah, I'm fasting, so it's normal. Don't worry about it, you know. If we're doing these things in order to be seen by others, we're doing them with the wrong motives and the wrong perspectives. Again, bring it back to what matters here, the motives Jesus is trying to communicate. In all three examples, Jesus says there is a reward. But the rewards of the Father are not immediately given. We like them immediately, don't we? Oh, I want that right here, right now. See, all these rewards you receive from men are treasures, and what we do with them is we begin to lay them up for ourselves on earth, right? We begin to kind of store them up, but they won't last. They have an expiration date, and it's sooner than we think. Now, all that to say, I want you to look now with me at verse 19, the verse that we're going to concentrate on this morning. It's a very familiar verse. It's such a great reminder to each of us concerning what we're doing with our resources, how we're living our lives. Starting at verse 19, he says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. For where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Did you guys hear that? Not even the greatest of thieves can break in and steal the treasure that is being stored up for you in heaven. And where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You know, this past Easter Sunday, we had an incredible time spent here in this sanctuary in God's Word, worshiping. You know, maybe our friends and families joined us, those who we might have invited here. We had some spiritual growth, but something else took place on that very morning, a different type of worship in a different area of our country. On Sunday morning, March 31st, a band of burglars broke into a cash storage facility located in the suburb of Sylmar, California. It was reported that these thieves made off with $30 million in stolen cash. To top that off, the burglars managed to break into the storage facility completely undetected. They entered through the roof. They managed to work around the alarm security system. They broke into the vault, and they completely escaped, eluding any type of detection. It's been quoted as something that you would only see in the movies, like an Ocean's movie or Mission Impossible. Even today, 2 months later, authorities are no closer to discovering the identity of these thieves than they were immediately following the fact. Even the people at the facility, they didn't even know there was a break-in until the next day. It was an employee went on record stating, "It's just mind-blowing that you would never suspect it. $30 million in the valley, gone. How? Why?" He says, "I'm still trying to process it. Was it an inside job? Was it just one person? Was it a group? You know, there's a lot of questions. And I've got a few questions of my own, right?" It was said of this group that the heist was so well planned and executed, it's quite possible the money will never be recovered and the thieves will never be discovered. So whoever these thieves were, they may have just made off with some of the greatest treasures in the history of robberies. Now look, despite how it might sound, I don't condone what they did, okay? Am I impressed? A little, okay. But I bring it up to help us understand our topic today. We all have things in our lives that we treasure and that we seek after and we're willing to go after at certain costs. You know, deep down, there's this innate desire for us to accumulate, whether it be actual riches, such as money, whether it be, you know, stocks, bonds, equity, investments, bank accounts, whatever it might be, right? Whether you're rich or poor, whether you're full or empty, you're a complainer or you're content, at some point we all come to the same conclusion and we question the question, which is, when is enough truly enough, or is enough ever really enough? You know, a survey was done many years ago. It asked a wide range of Americans how much money it would take for them to be satisfied, okay? So those who made $20,000 a year, they said, "I would need $40,000 a year to be satisfied." Those who made 40 said it would take 80. Those who made 100 said 200. So you get the idea, right? Pretty much everybody said, in order for the average American to be completely satisfied, they would need to make double of what they were currently earning. Okay? I'm not going to ask you this morning. But if I were to ask you how much it would take for you to be content, I'm guessing for many of us at least, we'd all be happy with just a little bit extra. That's why here in Matthew 6, Jesus wanted to address the biggest bank account that each of us have. It's not your secret account in the Caymans. It's not your $30 million you managed to steal from Sylmar, California on Easter, if you're here this morning or if you're online. It's not even that vault or that safety deposit box down at your local bank. No, Jesus cares more about what we accumulate in our heart than what it is that we accumulate in some bank account or in the form of equity or whatever's sitting in your garage. See, if what is accumulated in our hearts is equal to our treasure spiritually, then I've got to ask you something this morning. We all have things. We all have a treasure chest with valuables inside. But what are you accumulating inside your treasure chest? For some of us, it might be the love of money. For others, maybe it's the desire for fame or popularity or recognition or being known by other people. Or perhaps it's sin, clogging up those arteries of our heart, restricting the flow of life of a healthy heart. For some, it could be addictive behaviors, jealousies, filth. What does that treasure look like inside of that chest of yours? Hey, if you had even just $1 million, if you suddenly win the lottery, you hit jackpot, what would you do with the money? Have you ever thought of that? Of course you have. We all have, right? We hear people winning the lottery and we're like, "Oh man, you know, they won this many millions or whatever. Like, you know, man, I wish that would have been me. If only I played the lottery. If only I didn't buy 30 of the wrong tickets." You know who you are. But if we took a quick 30 seconds and we assessed and thought through our lottery winning plan, I bet it looked something like this. The first thing I'm going to do is pay off my house. And then I'm going to buy that nice, fancy car. The next thing I'm going to do is, you know, maybe I'll be generous and pay off my parents' house. Or maybe I'll buy them a house across the country. You weren't supposed to laugh at that. Then you're going to buy your house at the beach and then at the lake and just for fun because you can afford it in the mountains, right? You'd have to win more than $1 million to do all that. But I'm guessing that most of us would realize at some point, not even the largest bank account would ever truly satisfy when we come back down to earth and realize that this isn't realistic here. Because that's the thing about earthly treasure. It always leaves you wanting more. Hey, listen, having money is not bad. But what are you doing with your money? I'm referencing money a lot because that's what we think of when we think of treasure. But really, begin to fill in that blank here. What's the motivation behind what I do with everything I have? Am I being resourceful with the resources that God has given me? Am I stewarding them well? Because look again at verse 19. Pay close attention. Because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You know, speaking of our heart and culture and society today, you know, we use that word heart a lot, right? The secular cry of the world just says, hey, just follow your heart. Go where your heart leads you. Listen to your heart. Trust your heart. But when using that word, we know we're not really referring to the organ that beats inside of our chest, pumping blood through our bodies, keeping us alive. Now see, when the Bible speaks of the heart as we know it is the seat of our emotions. It houses our deepest desires, our likes, our dislikes, our longings, our yearnings. Hey, we are both led by our heart to places, and we're moved with compassion for others in our heart. Helen Keller said, "The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart." Now, that's coming from someone who understood the power of the human heart as the seat of the emotions probably better than anyone else in this room. And though I don't disagree with her, I also know the danger, though, of listening to your heart and following where it leads. Hey, if you ask me today what I desire and then ask me again tomorrow after I've slept on it for a night, I might have a different answer. Or I might not. The things I desired as a child are not the things I still desire today, and the things I desire today may not be the things I still desire in 10 years. That's because plans change. Life changes. Feelings, they come and go. See, when we follow our hearts, we can often be led astray. And do you know why? The answer is found in Jeremiah 17. Verse 9 of Jeremiah 17, we're told, now brace yourselves, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Okay. So you want to follow your heart? Okay. But do you know why God said that? Because God understands the heart more than anyone else. He created it. He created us to have feelings. It's a good thing. God knows your heart better than you do. As Jeremiah penned, he says, hey, who can know it? Well, the answer is God can know it. God does know it, right? Psalm 44 says, if we had forgotten the name of our God or stretched out our hands to a foreign God, would not God search this out? For he knows the secrets of the heart. In other words, you're not getting anything past God. He searches the heart. He knows the desires of man. Going back to Jeremiah 17:10, the next verse of what we read a second ago, continues with the answer to the question that God posed. When God says, who can know it? Who can know the heart? God then says, I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings. Now, I don't know if you know how fruit works. Seed is planted. Tree is grown. There's fruit. Yeah. You didn't know that, did you? Okay. You plant apples, apple seeds, you're going to get apple trees. You plant lemon seeds, you're going to get a lemon tree, right? That's how it works. I know I just changed your life forever. But that's what makes this verse so comforting and yet a little scary all at the same time. Because God searches my heart, he tests my mind, he gives to me according to my ways, according to the fruit of my doings. Uh-oh. Okay, then. Well, hopefully in his search, what he finds is good fruit. If God searches within and gives me according to the fruit of my doings, then Lord, may you find good fruit within. See, this is what Jesus was warning the Pharisees of in Matthew chapter 12. You can flip forward a couple of chapters. It's not far, don't worry. Matthew chapter 12, see, Jesus, he was getting all kinds of backlash. His words were radical, different, right? He was going against the religious grain. And they were going against him. And starting in verse 33 of chapter 12, this is what Jesus says. He says, look, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. He calls them brood of vipers. How can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. Guys, this is not rocket science. It's biology. I remember being a kid at my grandparents' house, and they had this apple tree out front, and we would climb up to the top, and then we'd get stuck, and our grandfather would have to help us get down, and he would say, stop doing that, but we would come down, and there'd be, you know, apples all over the ground and stuff. There'd be apples in the tree, but of course, we were attracted to the ones on the ground because they were already there, and we'd pick them up, we'd throw them at each other and stuff. You know why we enjoyed that? Because they were nasty, right? The fruit that had fallen had been sitting there for days. They had bad spots. They had worms. I mean, it was just, you know. So you know what we did? We deemed them as bad fruit. We obviously didn't eat them. But we tossed them as far as we could into the woods. We'd get rid of them. Because the fruit was bad. So let me ask you something. If Jesus were to take a look around in your life right now, maybe he steps down into the pasture of your heart. What kind of fruit would he find? And then what would he do with it? Hey, when he reaches down to pick it up and inspect it, would he say of you, hey, well done. You've been faithful. You've been a good steward of what I've given you. Wow, this is good fruit. Good job. Or would he pick up the fruit, take a glance, and maybe toss it in the woods? Hey, let me tell you something. It is not God's desire to reject the fruit you have to offer, but let's not forget Cain's sacrifice in the garden. If the sacrifice that we have to offer God is not really pleasing, it's fake, it looks good on the outside, but it's not true on the inside, it's not done with a devoted heart to him, it's not a worthy sacrifice. Hey, let me put it to you this way. The fruit in your life will reveal what's hidden deep inside. The way that you live your life will reveal to others what's been hiding inside your heart. So you know what? I want the fruit in my life to be genuine. I want the fruit in my life to reveal what God has done and is still doing in my life. I don't want to just say it, as Jesus said, hey, look, how can you, being evil, say good things? You can't, right? I don't want to just say things. I want to do things that are true and genuine. Now, here's what scares me. Mark 7 tells me what naturally flows out of the heart of man. We're told in Mark 7, for from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within the heart and defile a man. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? Out of what's inside will be revealed externally. So then I've got to ask myself, what shape and what condition is my heart in? Because if the heart is what drives a man to do the things he does, if the heart is what steers the body in different directions, if the heart is what influences the actions of a person, then that person must take account for the condition of their own heart. Hey, beyond blocked arteries and pacemakers, above cholesterol issues and arrhythmias, past the palpitations and the pressure, blood pressure problems, what is the spiritual state of your heart right now? Because just like the state of our physical heart is vitally important to the state of our physical health, so too is the state of our spiritual heart for our spiritual well-being. You know, it's sad, but physically, we're not guaranteed tomorrow. But spiritually, we're guaranteed eternity. That's why Jesus was constantly trying to bring this into perspective for us. He likens the tree and its fruit to a man and the treasure he produces out of his heart. Remember, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart will produce good things, but an evil man out of the evil of his heart will produce evil things. And I love this analogy of treasure. It got me thinking, hey, if fruit is what's being produced in my life, if treasure is what's overflowing out of my heart, then it forces me to determine whether or not that is good or evil, right? I need to be self-aware spiritually. So what does that treasure look like? What kind of treasure might there be in my heart? Well, quite simply, it looks like whatever it is that I value most. Because what did Jesus say? He says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Therefore, the things that I value most will be the things that my heart is attached to the most. Here's how you can tell. Ask yourself these questions. What are my greatest desires in life? What are the things that I chase after the most? What is it that I crave? What drives me? What motivates me? What is it that I seek? What treasure is it that I seek after and I hope to find? It's like the man who walks up and down the shore of the beach, you know, every day, look, with his metal detector. Do you think he's searching for seashells? No, he's looking for your $5,000 ring that slipped off your finger when that big wave knocked you out. He's searching for treasure. He's seeking after what will bring value to his life, at your expense, by the way. Hey, like the woman who spends her afternoons at the gas station scratching off $50 worth of tickets, you think she's just leisurely having fun out of the excess of her account? Probably not. She's searching for treasure. She's seeking after what will bring value to her life. Think now about what you've allowed into this treasure chest of yours. What exactly is bringing true value to your life? So if we were to do open heart surgery, would there be lasting treasure that has eternal value, or is it just simply things that can be easily destroyed by moth and rust? I'm reminded of the old cartoon where the hearse is seen dragging a U-Haul. One day when you die, because we all will die, sorry about that, but one day when you die, this is the only thing that will pass from our life here into the next will be our soul. Our soul is the only eternal part of our life here on earth. So now, as far as what will be in our spiritual U-Haul when we go, well, that's up to you. I can tell you some things that won't be there. It won't be money. It won't be fortune. It won't be fame. It won't even be a legacy, because legacies are meant to be left here on earth. It won't be whatever valuable and prized possessions that you've collected over the years and you keep safe, hoarded up in your basement, only so your kids will just sell it when you die. But I want you to consider the eternal value that these items will have after you're gone. And then consider, how am I using them at this moment? Am I using them for my own glory? Or am I open to what God wants to do with these things? What has God given me, and how am I using it for Him? Because in the parable of the talents, the master, he was not pleased to see that the talents were hidden. They were stored away. He was pleased, however, when he noticed the investment that was made, when it produced fruit, when it produced more, when it produced an increase of what he had given. And I think our master will be pleased when he sees what he's given us being sown back into his own kingdom. Hey, look, I love my wife and kids, but I don't idolize them. I love playing baseball with my boys and coaching them, but baseball is not my God. And I can assure you, money is definitely not my treasure. Oh, it'd be nice to have a fat stack, you know, at my disposal anytime I needed it or wanted it. But God probably knew that if I had lots of money, I would just squander it away. I'd spend it carelessly. Or perhaps I would just hold on to it too tightly. Because here's what happens when we hold on so tightly to these earthly things that we value so much. When we're constantly holding on tightly to the things that have no eternal value, our hands are no longer open to receive what God might want to place in them. See, maybe God's trying to get our attention while we're holding on to the things that, quote unquote, really matter more in our day-to-day lives. Maybe we need to try opening our hands to God and receiving the treasure that He has for us. And you know, God has given us, he's gifted us with so many blessings. His treasure is innumerable, but perhaps his greatest treasure he's ever given us is the gift of his own son, Jesus. He placed his own son on that cross in the place of where each of us deserve to be instead. Jesus hung on that cross. He breathed his last, all so we could have life, have it more abundantly, and have it eternal. See, God unveiled his greatest treasure in the form of his son, Jesus, absolutely free, no purchase necessary, a value even greater than gold, the treasure of salvation. Hey, the only thing that we need to do is just receive it. That's how it works, right? If you don't receive the treasure that's being handed over to you, you'll never have the treasure that's being handed over to you. God has offered it. We can simply receive it. Some people will search a lifetime for a hidden treasure, and they miss what's been revealed right in front of them their entire life. Because God has shared with us his own kingdom. He didn't hoard it to himself. Surely we can share his son with other people and his kingdom with others. Jesus told a parable of a man who found treasure hidden in a field. So what did the man do? He finds it, he hides it, and he was so happy about it, he sold everything he had just to buy the field. That's because when you find a treasure like heaven, you stop searching. Everything else pales in comparison. Hey, if where our treasure is, our heart will be there also, then may the things I treasure be the things of heaven. I want my heart to be set on heaven. Because when Jesus is our treasure, then we can commit everything else, our possessions, our resources, whatever it looks like, money, time, talents, accolades, whatever it might be, to the glory and honor of serving God. And you might be doing that now. But are we serving him with open hands? Ready and willing to let go of the temporary treasures that might be there if he decides to take them, and then ready for whatever else he might want to place in our hands in exchange. So think about all that God has given you. Think about all that God has placed you in charge of, and then think about, how am I using them for his glory? Hey, none of us was promised tomorrow, so with the time that we have left, how are we going to choose to spend it? You might be sitting on pennies. You might be sitting on millions. What will you choose to do with the money that God has blessed you with? Because we know we don't have to be rich monetarily in order to be rich spiritually, right? Hey, you might be working two jobs, have an hour a night, you know, with your family at best. You might be retired and struggling to fill your days with enough events that will keep you busy. But is there something you can invest your time into with whatever time you have, little or a lot, that will allow you to be open for what God has? We all have a chance right now to invest into the treasures of heaven while here on earth. Colossians 3 reminds us, and whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. See, God has rewards beyond what we can imagine. His inheritance is greater than anything we can receive. So what are we to do? We're to keep our hands to the plow. We're to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. When God is our greatest treasure, everything else can become an afterthought. And when we get to heaven, we're going to trample all over those golden streets, something I'd absolutely love to have in my hands right now, right? Something that God will just use as turf for me to walk on and get dirty when I see him and when I worship him. Therefore, I want to be somebody who is more heavenly minded. Rather than focusing on what's always right here, right in front of me, whatever's shouting the loudest for my attention, the things of this earth will always distract. So don't be caught off guard with the things that don't matter in the long run. Now, yes, we all have things in our lives that we need to take care of every day. That's part of being a steward. But also part of being a steward means having the mindset that says, hey, look, with everything that I do, how can I best do it for God's glory, for God's purpose? How can I lead my family today in a way that points them to Jesus? How can I best love this person that I know and show them both my love for Jesus and the love that Jesus has for them too? How can I spend my time today that will sow back into the kingdom of God? Because that's what it looks like to be a good steward. You're always sowing seeds. The question is, as Jesus said in Matthew 12, are we sowing seeds that will bring forth good fruit or perhaps bad fruit? Because the fruit of God and his Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering or patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, and then we're told against such there is no law. So these are the things that God sows into the heart of a believer. Am I then turning around and sowing these back into the kingdom of what God has planted into my heart? Because anything else is just for my own pleasure. It's for my own gain. May my heart be set on the treasures of heaven, for where my treasure is, there my heart will be also.